This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
This week on Lunchbox Envy. In America, they eat 100 acres of it every day.
In the 1950s, it was marketed to skeptical Britons as Italian Welsh rarebit.
And NASA has developed a machine that can 3D print them in space.
It's pizza, baby! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Jack and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Manu. How are you doing, Manu?
Good. And how are you?
I'm cracking, thanks. Great. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Woo. And we are also joined by food writer and chef, Rosie.
Ciao, belli.
Hey.
You asked me to do it in Italian.
I did. And thank you.
Piacere. And piacere to our listeners.
Oh, gosh.
That's piacere? The one word I know. The pizza seems to be, in my mind, the international dish. I feel like if aliens came down and presented their one dish that unified their whole culture, and then we were given the option to, present ours for Earth, we would give them pizza, probably.
Wow. That's quite a call out.
Do you have any bigger...
I mean, no, I think that's probably fair. Like, every single country in the world knows what pizza is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in my mind, it's got to be wheat dough based. And then typically the toppings are pretty varied, but the traditional ones are tomato sauce spread thinly and cheese. But there are many different options, aren't there?
Are we saying definitively that pizza is from Italy?
We have not yet come across a food where you can say it is definitively from Italy.
That's true.
But it is from Italy. Oh. Firmly Italian. Got evidence from kind of murals lost in the Pompeii explosion. So they've uncovered images from thousands and thousands of years ago of pizza-looking covered bread.
Well, Pompeii is near Naples, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the spiritual home of pizza. Mm-hmm. But it really only got big, like modern pizza as we know it, in the 20th century. In fact, it didn't really leave Naples until like the 1880s.
So it's a new food.
Yeah, and so pizza got more popular in America after the war because it was quite easy to make and cheap and satisfying, and there were lots of Italian immigrants making it. They actually popularized it worldwide. The Italians saw this and took it back and sort of reverse engineered the history and reclaimed it. And when you go to Italy today, you get the impression that pizza's been central to their culture for hundreds, thousands of years, when realistically it was only really a Neapolitan dish. And now we call it the pizza effect, when something gets popular elsewhere and then you sort of boost your original claim to it.
Oh, yeah. I do that with lots of stuff.
The Rosie effect. Presumably lots of cultures around the world invented the flatbread and then put stuff on it.
Yeah, because they have, like, for example, in Turkey, they have pita. Pita.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never know quite which way to say it. I really don't want to say pedo. And yet I have.
Oh, yeah, well, are you a pizza file?
But obviously, like, it's similar mm-hmm. in style and it's similar sounding words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. In France, they have pissaladière as well, mm-hmm. which True. I think came from Italy, but mm-hmm. is sort of local to the southeastern corner of France.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So the Greeks had pizza or pita flatbreads, and these existed all over the Mediterranean. And then the first mention that we know of pizza is from 997 Common Era in the north of Naples. It's actually from a rental document that promises to pay their landlord in pork meat pizza, huh. which would have been slices of bread with pork fat on it and cooked.
Sounds great.
So that was, yeah. The
landlords in London. Let's chat.
Yeah, if we can pay you by pizza.
Put that on your tax bill, HMRC might be a bit confused. But
yeah, and then in the 18th century, the kind of Neapolitan pizza as we know it starts kicking off. Like I said, the earlier ones are just covered in pork fat and oil. But then the tomato arrives in Italy in the 18th century. And that's when Neapolitan pizza as we know it is born.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's pretty cool.
And from memory, the margarita pizza, which we see in front of us today, was so made for the Queen Margherita.
Mm-hmm.
And it represents the Italian flag, the three mm-hmm. colors on the pizza, the red, the white of the cheese, and the green of the basil.
I'm about to debunk that myth.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I knew someone was watching to say something.
To be honest, it is inconclusive. So Queen Margherita was born in 1851. This story dates from 1889. Supposedly mm-hmm. she was served a new type of pizza, which had, you know, like you say, tomato, basil and mozzarella to represent the three colours of the Italian flag. And Italian patriotism was rife, given that the country was recently founded in 1861. So it was barely 25 years old when she was served this pizza. But A, the story came out in the 1930s after she died and many years after the event. And B, we found records of the exact ingredients of margaritas way before. So the margarita did exist before Queen Margherita tried it. But I think the branding has been really helpful because now everybody knows what you mean when you talk about a margarita pizza.
Mm.
I think as stories go, there's no reason not to spread it as truth. Yeah. But it is an example of a factoid in its true sense, mm-hmm. i.e. something that purports to be true and then is shared so much and so much that it becomes true and nobody knows the truth.
Do you all like a margarita? How do we feel about a margarita?
Yeah, see, I order one every time I go to a new pizza place, mm-hmm. just as like
a benchmark.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like if you can make a good margarita, then next time I come back, I'll like put some anchovies or pepperoni. Mm. Or
nice. I like that approach.
Spread out, yeah.
Just on the margarita, maybe the definition was a bit squiffy in the past, but today it is a traditional speciality guarantee dish.
Mm.
It's a TSG. So it got the award in 2009 from the EU. So it means that true pizza Neapolitana margarita has to measure 35 centimeters in diameter, needs an elevation of 1 to 2 centimeters along the rim, and it has to contain those ingredients, tomato, basil, and genuine mozzarella.
Yeah, I saw this. This is the Associazione Verace di Pizza Napoletana.
Oh,
is that
beautiful.
Right? AVPN.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they're basically the guys who hesitate to say pizza police, but they definitely, they're the ones. The polizza.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's an association who set the rules for Napoletana pizza, and you can still make a Neapolitan pizza, you just won't get the badge saying this is verified, mm-hmm. properly done. What was the three-letter acronym you used?
TSG.
See, there are so many of these because there's AOP mm-hmm. and AOC in mm-hmm. France, and Italy has the DOC
and the DOCG
and the mm-hmm. DOCG.
Listen, there's just associations. People just love bureaucracy and they just love setting shit up, mm-hmm. making it official, making themselves the head of something. I'm the head of the VPAN. What is that? Like, you're nothing.
This week we're sponsored by Express VPAN. Time for our first lunchbox, and that today is Rosie's.
I've made some pizza.
Hooray.
Oh my God.
I was hoping you'd say that.
A nice margarita.
Yeah.
Just keeping it simple, keeping it classic. And it's a $10,000 pizza dough recipe.
Whoa, and hang on. Does the budget stretch?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
The budget has gone, guys. I am for the record, a lazy person when it comes to like doughs yeah. and getting prepped and those kinds of things. And pizza dough famously does need kind of a bit of preparation. Right. Like the best pizza doughs or the sort of more classic pizza doughs are fermented for a day, sometimes 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Neapolitan doughs can often be 3 days fermentation.
Whoa.
And that's just something I'm not going to do, I'm afraid. just not organized enough for that. Mm. So this recipe caught my eye because this is a recipe from a guy called Scott Wiener. do you know who Scott Wiener is?
Yeah, I found him during my research.
Did you? Okay, so Scott Wiener runs Scott's Pizza Tours in New York City. Mm. And he also helped start Slice Out Hunger, which is a food insecurity charity from the pizza community of New York.
Nice.
Love that for them. Anyway, Scott was on a TV show on Hulu a couple of years ago called Best in Dough.
A
pizza-based culinary competition show. And every episode, three people came on, made a pizza. They had the opportunity to win $10,000. And Scott won on his episode with this pizza dough.
Oh.
Basically, Scott was faced with the sort of conundrum for any pizzaiolo, which is that when you get on set for the show, you only have an hour to make your pizza dough, and then you can have an overnight fermentation. They film the actual thing the next day. But an hour to make a pizza dough when ideally you do a pre-ferment, you do all these little different stages, is not very long. And so Scott was like, how am I going to get the best flavor out of my pizza dough in this very short space of time with minimal different proof opportunities? Typically, pizza dough is water, flour, a tiny bit of yeast, and a tiny bit of olive oil. Scott has used beer in his pizza dough instead of water. Instantly, I was like, yes, Scott, I love lager. But I was also like, love the idea that this is going to be as delicious as a 3 day fermented pizza.
Yeah. Shortcut.
But done in, you know, a very short space of time. Because as I said, I'm lazy. I'm just not prepared. You won't ever catch me making a fucking sourdough, nor will you catch me making a 3 day pizza dough.
That's got to go in your bio.
Yeah. You just won't catch me doing it. Beer is obviously fermented itself, contains a lot of yeast.
And historically, beer was known as liquid bread because it's made of all the same ingredients.
Yes. So Scott left his overnight, but you can make this same day and use it 4 hours after you've made it. Whoa. And it will be deliciously puffy, have a great flavor. Because you might have noticed this, you might not. I think it's something that actually isn't always in our heads, is that pizza crust is a big part of the flavor of pizza. It's not just about the ingredients that are on top of it. The dough is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So the longer the fermentation, the better the flavor. Pretty much in any dough.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
If it sits for a long time, it develops this amazing yeasty, natural toffee, caramelly flavor that we love, that we associate with good sourdough pizza and good Neapolitan pizza. But it's just hard to get without that long time, unless you use beer.
Nice.
So this is what I've made. So should we have a try?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay. Is it going to make us drunk?
No. Interestingly, Alexandra Stafford, who wrote this Substack article about this dough, said that she tried it with non-alcoholic beer and it worked really well.
Right.
So if you don't want to use alcoholic beer, even though it won't be alcoholic to eat because it gets cooked at a very high temperature, you can. So
amazing.
Why not?
Nice.
Okay, so what do we think about Neapolitan style pizza?
To my mind, it's floppier, fluffier, more bubbly crust, I would say. And I've heard tale of the sort of leopard spot idea of like having some bits very singed, but actually the whole thing is not particularly hard. If you tapped it, it wouldn't make a noise. Mm-hmm.
The leopard crust. Is a characteristic of a Neapolitan style pizza, partly because of the temperature it's cooked at.
Yes.
So
it's going to be super hot.
It's cooked at 450 degrees C for a maximum of 90 seconds.
Wow.
That's mad.
Because my oven only goes to 250, and I don't know about yours, but...
Let's get a new oven.
Exactly.
Disgraceful.
This is my issue with Neapolitan pizza, is the flop. I'm picking it up, all my fucking toppings sliding right off.
Maybe you should eat it with a knife and fork.
Well, apparently it is designed to be eaten with a knife and fork. I did read that.
So I was reading how like the best way to eat a pizza as well, because the flop is a massive problem.
Yeah.
And there's loads of complicated...
The flop.
Alex, the producer, is just laughing at me now. There's a really complicated equation behind the explanation to get rid of the flop. which I asked Jack to look up because I couldn't understand it properly because I was reading it and it's got like in the explanation, it's like, imagine an ant walking around a cylinder on the moon, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what the fuck? Basically, if you fold your pizza lengthways, so you're not like folding the tip to the crust, you're folding either side of the crust together.
Yeah.
And that holds its shape, even if it's a floppy Neapolitan most of the time.
So yeah, it was a guy called Johann Carl Friedrich Gauss. He was German. He lived from 1777 to 1855. And at some point during those dates, he worked out the thing called Gaussian curvature. The way to imagine curvature is you can scrunch up a piece of paper as much as you like. It will retain the same value for its Gaussian curvature. And this is why you can't wrap a basketball without like certain bits coming out, because flat paper and a sphere have different Gaussian curvatures. So when you have a pizza slice, now put a little kink in the end. In order to retain its Gaussian curvature, when you add a curve to the otherwise flat pizza, some part of it has to remain flat. And the bit that remains flat is the line of symmetry.
Right. I see. So is this then mathematically the best way to eat pizza?
It's certainly the way to keep the toppings on. Mm-hmm. Neapolitan pizza is less rigid. So if you want to do it like that, you'll end up folding it basically entirely two-dimensionally.
Yeah.
In order to retain that flatness.
Yeah, I do eat my pizza like that. I've watched us all do it. Like, we all did the same thing. I still don't like it. Just to say, it hasn't changed my mind.
So what is your preferred?
My preferred style pizza is a New York style.
Ooh. Is it true? I've heard that New York pizza is unique because of the water they use.
So New Yorkers like to claim that their pizza and their bagels are the best because the water, the New York state tap water, is the best. Or particular, for a very particular style of tap water. Basically, New York City and New York State have very soft water.
Okay.
It's not hard. It's soft. A lot of that water comes from the Catskill Mountains.
Ooh.
And basically, they go on a really fucking long journey. The water molecules, the water goes on a really long journey from the Catskills for a very old pipe system. Mm. Apparently it should be refurbished. And it can take from 12 weeks to a year for the water to get to New York.
That's so cool.
Then it is obviously treated. But in that time, in that journey, it picks up lots of different minerals and compounds and elements and natural deposits that are in the Catskill Mountains. And it has quite a low concentration of calcium and magnesium.
Mm.
We should probably explain the difference between hard and soft water.
Well, one of them is just way cooler and more streetwise than the other. So there's kind of a lot more minerals in hard water. So stuff like calcium and magnesium. And it's also the one that builds up limescale in your kettle.
Ooh,
I know. And it also can kind of make your hair feel a bit funky. If you have a shower in hard water, it can feel a bit claggier. So there's just like a lot more going on in hard water.
The bonus is in places with hard water, there are a few instances of bone fractures.
Really?
Because we've got more calcium in our diet.
Interesting. But also, isn't it true that soft water versus hard water, you get a better interaction with soap, a better lather?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Basically, if you use that water in the dough, it will make it softer.
Mm.
It'll make it stickier, make it actually antithetical to what we've just described.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, why New Yorkers had to start adding things like more oil and sugar to their dough and cooking it slightly differently, which has led to this distinctive, definitive New York style.
It's amazing how these all evolve. I don't drink Yorkshire tea in London because it's called Yorkshire tea because it was made for Yorkshire water. And London's got very hard water because it's got lots of calcium in it because the soil's very chalky. And that's why they've got a hard water version. And
Do they have a hard water?
Green packaging. But I do remember bringing back in my water bottle. I visited Madrid, which champions its tap water and is very soft. And I would make a cup of tea from the Madrid water
just
to see how it was.
The most extra. I love it.
It's very British of you, all this tea chat.
No, and also a bit wanky. Like, I appreciate that the concept of terroir is I love it, first of all. Like, it's basically, it came from winemakers in France, and the idea that the biology and the microclimate of the soil you're growing the grapes in is irreplicable. You can use the same grapes in the same climate somewhere else in the world and it won't taste the same.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not that's detectable in blind taste tests, I think is irrelevant, because to me, it's much more about the myth and the fable behind it. Mm. It's also part of the backing behind the three-letter acronyms. Mm-hmm. We talked about AOC and DOP and DOGC.
Yeah.
And the idea that champagne can only be made in Champagne region because of the microclimate mm-hmm. and the microbiome.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe the, whether it's a myth or not, the New York pizza water is a lovely myth to perpetuate, because I think there might be something in it.
And like small changes in, like the soil and temperature and like the kinds of minerals in the ground, like all of this stuff makes a big difference. Yeah. One of the things we were talking about on the way over, is because we got the same train, was how the person who's making the dough, the microbiome and the stuff on their hands has a unique influence on the bread and how it proves and ferments. So like even the baker's microbiome influences the taste of the dough. It's so cool.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if they do change the water system or upgrade it somewhat, what effects that would have on the pizza dough, and whether they'd all have to start changing their recipes.
Pizza sales plummeting.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same, which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe, made just for the little ones.
Plus Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Okay, it's time for our second lunchbox, and today that comes from Manu. What have you brought?
I have bought cold takeaway pizza. An entire cold next day pizza.
This is something, I don't think I've ever seen an entire one.
Yeah, me neither.
It's very, you never get, there's never enough at the end left.
It's quite disturbing, but I like it. Would anyone like a slice?
I'd love one.
Would I? So first question, is this good? Is this good food? Do you enjoy it?
Yeah.
You don't seem that convinced.
I don't see why people rave about cold pizza. Mm-hmm. I think it's so much better hot.
I mean, I really like it because this reminds me of that treat of finding a cold slice of pizza in the fridge and being like, yes, either you're hungover or you're just like desperately hungry for a snack.
No, I get that.
It's definitely a different and still enjoyable thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The gift that keeps giving. I think so anyway. I love the next day slice of pizza. And in 2000, there was a Scottish chemistry lecturer called Dr. Maureen Cooper, who actually figured out why cold pizza does so well when you keep it the next day.
Okay.
So firstly, the tomatoey pizza base kind of traps water molecules in it.
Okay.
So it stops the water from soaking down into the dough when you leave it for a really long time. And then because fat and water classically don't
mix
exactly, the layer of that watery tomato paste stops the fat on the top from soaking through to the dough also.
Okay, so the dough remains relatively untouched.
Exactly, which is why it's still got structural integrity a day after. On top of that, the oils that are usually used on pizza, if you're using any additional oil to the cheese, tend to be kind of olive oil, things that don't congeal over time that much. So you still get a kind of similar mouthfeel even when the fat's colder. On top of that, the cold temperature changes how we actually physically taste the dish.
Right.
So at warm temperatures, our sweet and bitter taste receptors are kind of more open, they're more receptive. So you get the more sweet and bitter notes. When it's cold, those receptors die down a bit, and you get more of the sour saltiness coming through. So it's actually becoming more savory as it's cool.
There's like a rule in, I use it a lot specifically for like meat cookery, is that if you're cooking anything, if you're braising anything, it needs a rest. Like, and the resting is when all of the flavor molecules start to like properly make friends. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's a sort of similar mm-hmm. principle here. Like this pizza has rested mm-hmm. overnight and it's tasting way more intense and yeah. way more, you know, unified.
No, that's exactly right. All of the flavors have time to mingle and kind of become friends. More. Yeah. yeah. They're having a great time in friends. The fridge. Yeah.
Because when they're hot, they're all very separate and tense and, you know,
but now they're all chill, yeah. literally, yeah.
They've all chilled out, they've relaxed, they've got to know each other and they're having a good time. Pizza party, literally. Yeah.
The dough might actually be improving as well. Over time, starchy foods tend to liberate more glucose and sucrose. So the pizza dough might actually be becoming more flavorful and sweeter overnight.
Right.
So literally everything on the pizza is just getting tastier.
I mean, I understand it. Like, I do get the sense of it. It's. I suppose the reason why you eat it hot is the mouthfeel more than anything, yeah. right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, because the one thing that lets cold pizza down is that everything is harder mm-hmm. and stodgier.
No.
We sort of don't lean towards that. I think mouthfeel is sort of undervalued sometimes as a culinary process. And like, we want to eat that nice hot mm-hmm. crusty dough with a nice melty cheese and the nice, mm-hmm. you know, soft meat pepperoni. The pepperoni on this is like eating a slice of, you know, cardboard, mm-hmm. but delicious cardboard.
Great cardboard, but yeah.
Fantastic yeah. cardboard.
If cold pizza was literally better, you would be able to find it in shops, wouldn't you? I also think what you're missing is the fragrance, because when things are hot, the chemicals fly off.
True.
It's
the olfactory experience nice. When something yeah. is hot is better.
This is very true.
Maybe my slam of cold pizza is coming from a strange place, because a lot of hot foods get really bad when they're cold and left in the fridge overnight, and actually pizza stands up pretty well.
Yeah. I'd also say, Jack, I've watched you eat some fairly questionable cold stuff in this house when you've had your lunches here, so you're really talking some absolute bullshit.
But I think one of the beautiful things about pizza is this ability to completely change into basically a new dish.
Yeah, I think it needs a different name, right?
Yeah, what would you call it?
Fritza.
Fritza.
Like fridge pizza, yeah. portmanteau. So let's talk about takeaway pizza, because culturally it's a massive part of pizza as a dish. Domino's, founded in Michigan in 1960, they actually came up with the pizza box design. Because oh. previous to that, it was served in flimsy paper bags or sometimes even reusable metal containers. A bit like, do you know, an Indian tiffin box,
mm-hmm.
but obviously much wider mm. and potentially flatter. So they would carry them around in those sort of things. And
ah.
I remember I talked about ice cream being served on a metal rod back mm-hmm. in the ice cream episode. And then you yeah. lick it off and give the rod back to be cleaned.
Wow.
I feel like pizza boxes, for me, when I was growing up and I was watching American television, like mm. they are like so significant of Americana to mm-hmm. me.
Still, I haven't seen in the UK the Chinese takeaway American pizza.
Oh, yeah, the fold up cardboard. Yeah,
I'm yeah. waiting for those. That's my version. Oh, yeah, I would love
I
to eat that one.
Also obsessed with those. Yeah, it's literally like you're in Friends or in Sex and City or any of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
Domino's became famous for its 30 minutes or free guarantee. I would arrive within half an hour or you'd get your money back.
Great deal, that.
Yeah, great guarantee. In 1979.
That was in 1979?
Yeah.
What a time to be alive. Does that still happen now?
No, they had to cancel it because drivers were basically driving unsafely.
Oh, okay.
Damn.
So for delivery driver safety, they had to cancel that. They only dropped it in 1993, so it went on for like more than 10 years.
Yeah.
In America.
Countless died.
Yeah. Pizza was also the first food ordered over the internet as well.
Wow.
Back in 1994, this was Rivals Pizza Hut.
Oh.
But they, or someone ordered a pizza basically through what was known as the pizza net. Because back when the internet was just,
Christ.
It was just known as the net. You would like surf mm-hmm. the net.
Yeah. Burr, 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 burr. You yeah. know, remember that sound?
Insert dial-up phone here. That was a good impression.
I don't,
thank you very much.
Going back to Domino's, they were one of the first companies to invest in GPS tracking because it's important to know where your driver is and really helpful. The first galactic delivery was back to Pizza Hut There's sort of an arms race going on here.
Sorry, by Galactic, yeah. They delivered pizza to the space station.
In 2001, Pizza Hut spent about $1 million to deliver a 6-inch pizza to the ISS, International Space Station.
Silly.
Wow.
Yeah, the first pizza in orbit.
There's also
but it can't have arrived hot.
And just to bring these two rival companies together in a fantastic story, in 2024... Pizza Hut sponsored the World Championship Domino's Tournament with the tagline, "People who like Domino's love Pizza Hut," which I think is so clever and so petty. Time for my lunchbox. And today I've brought you a 3-course meal of pizza-flavoured things that aren't pizza.
Oh, what?
So we've got cheese strings, pizza flavoured.
Nice.
Pepperoni pizza slice from Pucker, which looks like a pasty.
I'm scared of that one.
And some pizza flavoured crisps.
Mm.
Oh.
Specifically Pizza Hut margarita flavoured.
No. Nice.
I don't know if I could tell you what a Pizza Hut margarita specifically tastes like. So,
well, we're about to find out.
Well, yeah, I guess we will.
And then for pudding, I've also brought a gummy pizza.
Oh, I love those.
Yay!
Is anyone excited to try any of this? Because
I would like a crisp, please.
Okay, cool. Let's crack these open.
Okay, so this is the starter course. Best episode ever.
I'm getting a few elements of pizza in there. I'm getting like a bit of basil.
Mm.
I'm getting sort of tomatoey sweetness, and I'm getting cheesiness.
Okay.
I think the interesting test would be if you gave that to someone and you didn't tell them it was pizza flavour, would they know?
Blind taste test.
I'm not mad at them. They're pretty delish.
But what I'm fascinated in is the concept of a pizza flavoured thing.
Mm.
I looked into it. There are pizza flavoured drinks, cocktails.
Ooh.
It's like a bit of a twist on a Bloody Mary. I found pizza flavoured ice cream. And I found pizza flavoured condoms.
Oh my God.
I didn't buy any. They weren't for sale.
Thank the Lord.
So it does seem like the definition of pizza can stretch. Did you see the USA recategorize pizza as a vegetable?
What? This is the best story.
In 2011, the US Congress, they blocked changes to school lunch rules. But the argument was, if it's got 2 tablespoons of tomato paste, then it has enough vitamin C to count as one of your 5 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that logic is sound. You can't replace all your vegetables with pizza, but there is enough vitamin C in one pizza that you can cover it with whatever shit you want, right? You can put heroin on your apple. It still contains an apple's worth of vitamin C, right?
You heard
it's not good for you. It's not good for you.
Put heroin.
That's so interesting. There's quite a lot more vegetables in my diet than I previously thought in that case.
So it's ironic that this is the first actual vegetable legally defined that we have had on the podcast.
Yeah, you heard it here first, guys. Pizza is a vegetable.
But it got me thinking about other unusual ways in which we interpret pizza. One thing that NASA did in 2013 was they 3D printed a pizza.
Ooh.
I can't get my head around that.
They developed it on the ground with the expectation that one day it might be able to print pizzas in space. So you could just send up the raw materials and then it would make it 3 layers.
For the poor old astronauts living in space,
yeah.
Pizza-less.
Yeah.
Right.
They used food powders stored in cartridges that could last 30 years. So I think that's one of the main advantages is its shelf life. Because if you're actually making a pizza and it's a 3-year mission to Mars, then it's not going to last. But if you've got powders, completely dry.
It makes me wonder. Will 3D printing become the new chefing at some point? If 3D printers made all of our food, I think that's when we'd end up looking like the people in Wall-E.
In Wall-E. To top things off, should we talk about toppings?
Mm, yes.
Are we going to the place, the dark place? I think we're going.
You mean pineapple on pizza?
Yes, I do.
I mean, it's well covered. I think you either can or you can't. Like, I know the theory behind it that like pineapple has an enzyme in it called bromelase that goes with ham particularly well because the enzyme dissolves the meat. So
pineapple eats you when you eat it.
So cool.
Anyway, I don't mind pineapple on pizza. What I did discover marrying a South African is that there's a more heinous topping.
No.
Yeah, I mean, each to their own, but they put avocado on their pizza.
No. No.
You hear it here first. No.
Like the Californian vibe. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
But it's so squishy.
I know, and I find something odd about warm avocado.
Yeah, agreed.
That one in the bin, straight away.
In Hong Kong, you can get snake meat pizza.
Nice. That I would try before
avocado. I tried to buy some snake meat to bring to my lunchbox today, but it's they were all sold out.
I am relieved you could not do that, I've got to say.
Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com. So, Rosie, do you have any bonus recipes for us on pizza today?
Well, I actually think Jack has something he'd like to mention.
Oh, I've been dying to tell you this. So instead of, I've got a new method of eating pizza. Instead of cutting your pizza into triangle slices, you cut a big spiral through the middle until it ends up right in the middle. And then you eat the pizza snake crust first. And then, you finish up with the middle bit, which is the best.
That is insane.
That's
the pizza snake. And also, so the wrong order.
You'll all be trying it. So we'll leave you with this from legendary baseball player Yogi Berra. You better cut the pizza in 4 pieces because I'm not hungry enough to eat 6. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Woohoo. Goodbye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Henriot, Rosie McKean, and me, Jack Chambers. It was mixed by Liang Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.